Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and what's become a once-a-week ritual, we've got a guest. We've got my colleague, Layla Mutin, who is the nutritionist at the Hoffman Center, and together we're going to field some of your questions. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Once again, Layla, you've accumulated quite a fan club. A lot of people saying that they really enjoy the podcast when you participate.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, already you've been busy today because I see this morning you sent out an edition of the Intelligent Medicine newsletter. That's one of your chores at the Hoffman Center. And I'm excited because I think I wrote a really cool article about all the new evidence that suggests that a low-carb diet approach is helpful. And the title of the article in the newsletter was, It's Been a Bad Month for Carbs. And indeed, you know, a bunch of studies show that excess carbohydrates and sugar, refined carbohydrates, have deleterious effects, and that a lower carbohydrate diet can alleviate that. So apropos of that, you know, we didn't coordinate, but you also wrote an article. We're kind of independently targeted on this because, like, I do my thing, you do your thing, and then we put our articles together in the newsletter.
Yes.
And then you wrote a nice article that kind of features your upcoming seminar. Tell us a little bit about that.
The upcoming seminar is How to Alzheimer's Proof Your Brain. And that will be in October, October 23rd, which is a Wednesday from 6 to 7:30. It's all about how to prevent Alzheimer's disease, and it should be very, very informative. It's been longer than a year since I've done this particular seminar, and there's some new information as well, which is always good. But Alzheimer's disease is being called type 3 diabetes, and this is what we have to contend with in dealing with Alzheimer's, and I'll get into all the whys and how that happens and so forth.
Great.
And the lecture.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And your lectures are always very, very detailed. And unfortunately, they are, fortunately for some people, unfortunately for others, because actually we have podcast listeners all over the world. I just got a comment from somebody who listens to our podcasts in Ireland. So, you know, via the reach of the Internet, there's a lot of people listening. So we don't want to just direct this to people in New York City. But for those of you who are in the environs of New York City, we're located at, why don't you give the information?
At
776
6th Avenue. we're in Chelsea, and it will be on the third floor. Reservations are a must, so you must call the office to reserve your seat. And that number is 212-1744.
Say it again, because we had a little stutter in our transmission.
The phone number is 212-779-1744.
I see where you got the 779, because that's
your
phone number.
Yes.
So it's 779-1744 is our phone number. I was thinking, like, where'd you get, I mean, like, you know, is it too hot today or something?
But no, I often hiccup on that one because one is 779 and the other is 776,
So our address is 776 6th Avenue, and, you know, that's, you know, for New Yorkers that, you know, some people refer to as Avenue of the Americas, but we New Yorkers don't refer to it as Avenue of the Americas. We never went for that. Do you know that there's actually a place in New York? I was walking around New York, and I think it's on 55th Street or 56th Street, between 6th and 7th Avenues.
Mm-hmm.
There's a 6th and a half Avenue. I swear.
Oh!
Have you ever seen
that? No!
It's like for two streets. I think it's 55th and 56th or 54th.
Uh-huh.
There's actually a little sign and there's a little crosswalk and the cars have to stop there for pedestrians to go across between 6th and 7th Avenue. So there's actually a 6th and a half Avenue.
I'm going to have to go find that. That's
going to have to take a picture and put it on up on my Facebook page because it's pretty amazing. A little bit of New York City inside baseball. Okay, so we have a bunch of questions. But before we get to the questions, one of the big issues that came up this week has to do with something called the BMI, the body mass index. And the headline I have in the story in front of me says, researchers weigh in on the body fat versus BMI debate. Now, for us, I kind of laugh because for us at the Hoffman Center, we've always despised the body mass index.
That's true.
So tell us a little bit about the distinction. and why BMI is, you know, it's
body mass index. Body mass index is not a great indicator of normal weight, overweight, underweight, any of that. Body mass index uses the calculation of weight and height multiplied by a certain factor, and if you hit a particular zone, you're normal or whatever. But it doesn't tell us a much more critical information, which is the amount of body fat we're carrying versus our lean mass. So somebody could be within a normal BMI range for normal weight, but still be over fat, still be carrying a fat greater than 32%. Women who carry fat greater than 32%, 32% plus, are at risk. For men, it's 25%. Plus. And this is something that BMI does not take into consideration at all. And that's why I've never found it to be very good. The other thing is, most of us know that muscle weighs more than fat. It's more dense. Athletic people will weigh more. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you know, showing their BMI to be higher. But they are in no way, shape, or form overweight or over fat.
Yeah,
it's just the BMI calculation. Yeah.
I actually am an example of that because for a while, I got away from aerobic exercise and, you know, running and all that kind of stuff because I just got kind of tired of it. This is about 10 years ago. And I decided to get in the weight room and start building myself up with the weights. And it's kind of addictive. You know, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, my physique got, you know, more buff. And I started putting on weight. And I went from a normal suit size. I'm a 40. I went up to a 42 or a 44. Because I was putting on weight. I'm 5'10" or so, and my weight went up to about 188 pounds. But I was in great shape. I was bench pressing more than my body weight. I felt really good. But if we did the BMI calculation on someone 5'10", 188 pounds,
Could you
come up with that?
That would give you a BMI of approximately 27.
27, which would be considered borderline overweight.
Overweight, exactly.
Yeah.
And this is why we don't like BMI. So.
And so how about like a football running back? You know, some of these guys are kind of like, they're built like fire plugs. They're under 6 feet, maybe 5'10", like me.
Mm-hmm.
But they weigh 210, you know, and, they're fast and they're muscular. And they would be considered obese, but they're actually superbly trained athletes.
That's right. That's right. And that's why we don't like BMI.
Yeah. And conversely, you know, you can actually get some people who seem to be okay, but they got, you know, if you look at them, and this is the BMI, you can't see what a person looks like. It belies their physical appearance. But, you know, you can see they have kind of a pot belly. They got really skinny legs. They got weak musculature. And there's actually, you know, I wish I'd coined this term. It's a great term. Normal weight obesity.
Yes.
Or skinny fat people.
Skinny fat people or metabolic obesity.
Yeah, metabolic obesity.
Normal weight
people, yeah.
Yeah, so that's that normal weight looking person who's actually very flabby. But there are even cases of the supermodel who are over fat, mm-hmm. right? You know, normally they would have a BMI of 19 or less or something like that. But if you take their fat percentage, you may find otherwise that it would be well over, say, 25 or something like that. So, yeah, metabolic obesity generally is anybody we see with a body fat percentage of greater, I like to say greater than 30, 32.
And now it varies by the sex, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
For women, it would be 30, 32. For men, it would be about 25%.
Because as a rule of thumb, we want women to be less than a third body fat. Because
mm-hmm.
women have curves, you know, after all, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not so much today, but if you look at the, you know, the paintings in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you know, different standard of beauty, and, you know, they're non-anorexic models.
Right.
And men should be less, by rule of thumb, they should be less than a quarter body fat. So like a superbly trained athlete, very lean, might be, you know, 8-10%, you know, one of these marathon runners. Much below that, and their problems, right?
Much below that, there would be problems because then for women there may be infertility. We need fat cells for that estrogen. So there could be infertility problems. There could be some anorexia, much less than that. You know, women may suffer from amenorrhea, you know, decreased periods or no periods at all, no menstruation at all. For men, I'm less certain of that. Actually, men like to be so rippling all the time. But
I guess less consequences for men. You know, but there, you know, some men, you know, go overboard too with caloric restriction. So okay, so what's the alternative? And that's a technique we've been using forever. I mean, I think even before you joined our staff many years ago, we were using the body composition analysis machine.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Body composition analysis basically assesses how much fat-free mass is on our bodies as opposed to fat mass, and it's a very, very, very good indicator of being at an acceptable percentage of fat, of very fit, of athletic, or anybody who's at risk, and depending on what their numbers show us. So we do this. Everybody who walks in the door, we definitely do this particular analysis. It's definitely part of my nutrition analysis for all of our patients who come in. And a lot of people are surprised to find out, oh, but you know, I work out or I this or I that, and why is my fat percentage this? We investigate a little further and we find out, yes, you're working out, but if you're eating the wrong way or what we determine to be the wrong way, you may still be keeping your body in fat storage mode,
mm-hmm.
which is not the best. So that's where we tend to tweak and make sure and completely streamline the diet to enhance their fitness, to enhance their exercise. And, you know, lo and behold, after several weeks or months, people are able to achieve their goals in, you know, the acceptable amount of body fatness.
And, you know, the problem is they've based so much scientific research and statistical analysis, and they've even based, you know, perhaps even insurance premiums may be based on BMI.
Oh, yeah.
And so people are put at risk of being misclassified. Their disease risk might be ignored, or it might be exaggerated based on an erroneous, you know, pigeonholing based on this BMI category. And then there are all these scientific studies that are based on BMI. And now an article has come out and, you know, made kind of a splash this week that BMI really is obsolete and we shouldn't be placing so much reliance on it.
It is obsolete. It is obsolete. And if insurance companies are going to base premiums on that, that would be a terrible mistake. There are going to be a lot of fitness certified personal trainers and other, you know, athletic people such as yourself who are going to be, oh, your BMI is more than it should be, so guess what? We're going to increase your premium because you're at risk of chronic disease, and it's just not so.
Well, P.S., I got my BMI down because I'm now like 165 to 100, you know, 168,
uh-huh.
something like that, usually hovering around that. And that's, you know, because I just kind of laid off all that heavy lifting and I do more aerobic exercise. So that's mm-hmm. a way to get the weight up. I think, you know, it probably gets me under 23 or 24 or something, maybe 24,
mm-hmm.
I would
mm-hmm.
guess. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, and then the other thing, I mean, clearly we will sometimes see people who appear to be overweight. They're kind of chunky, but try as we might, we can't find that they have a metabolic problem. We'll do a glucose tolerance test on them with insulin, and we'll say, hey, you know something? You know, you may be a little bit chunkier than you'd like to be, but metabolically you're okay, your cholesterol's okay, your triglycerides are okay, numbers stack up, and then we can provide people with reassurance that they're not at risk, because not all overweight people are the same. Sometimes it's you know, a person just a few pounds overweight could be very, very seriously at risk. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a person who seems you know, like to be kind of a chunk mm-hmm. Might be metabolically okay.
Right, exactly. So everybody's different. We can't assess just by looking at somebody. We really have to go through the comprehensive assessment on all of that.
I even like, you know, we have this very simple thing, which is the waist-hip ratio. I even like, I mean, that, as bad as that is, and, you know, it's got some faults, I think it's actually better than the BMI. You know, if you take, you know, it's the 99-cent tape measure test, where you take a tape measure, you run around your waist. What is it for men? What is it for women?
It's got to be less than, it's got to be less than 0.8. I believe for both. And what it is you're dividing the waist circumference in inches by the hip circumference to get that number to see whether you're at risk. Now, the problem with this particular one also is a little bit with body shape. You could take a very skinny woman who has no hips,
mm-hmm.
and she may show up with a waist to hip ratio showing them at risk, and they are clearly not.
Okay.
It is simply the build of their body, and
the
not all women
pelvis.
Have hips.
Yeah, shape of the pelvis.
Yeah, exactly. So it's that kind of a thing too.
Yeah, for men, I generally we like it to be less than one, you know, less than 0.9 for men.
Mm-hmm.
But we need simple ways to assess whether people are in trouble. BMI is just not going to cut it. There's so many tables available on the internet. Somebody said, why don't you put a BMI calculator on your website so that people can get that information? I said, I don't want it. I don't really, because it's inaccurate.
Good. Yes. Another indicator that occurs to me is to take your height in inches, and that your waist circumference should not be more than half
okay.
of your height in inches.
Okay.
So say a woman is 5'6", 66
okay.
inches.
Okay.
Her waist circumference should not be more than 33 inches.
Okay.
33 is kind of a little much too, but,
right.
you know, but just, yeah.
Well,
so there are all these methods, but the body composition is by far way better than everything that we're talking about.
Right. So for a man, it might be like if a man is at 5'6", they better have a waist less than 33 or less.
Right.
Because otherwise that's trouble. Again, there's some exceptions. All
mm-hmm.
right. So a variety of ways to calculate whether you're at optimal weight. And by the way, new study came out this week that suggests that we thought, is weight a big risk factor for death? And, various studies have been back and forth on that. They say it's as bad as smoking. Originally, they estimated that the added risk of dying young, if you were overweight, was 5%. Now they've upgraded that to 18%. So they, in fact, they underestimated the risk of carrying excess weight.
Mm-hmm.
Again, results may vary. There are exceptions.
yeah.
But as a rule of thumb, being overweight is still putting yourself at risk. All right. So let's move on to our question. Oh, by the way, I just want to mention, for followers of Intelligent Medicine, if you listen to this podcast, if you like my radio show on weekends, Health Talk, and if you subscribe to the newsletter, and by the way, did I tell you about the new Broadway play that I'm putting on? It's going to be a musical. No, it's not. I'm just kidding. I'm on Twitter. So we're tweeting lots of interesting stories, and so my Twitter handle, I have to get used to this terminology here, is mm-hmm. @DrRonaldHoffman. So follow me on Twitter, and you'll get lots of useful information. Check me out also on Facebook. Facebook I've been doing for a long time. It's a lot of fun. All right, so questions from our – by the way, if you have a question – radioprogram@AOL.com. You can send us your questions. Make them brief, please. We actually had to throw out one question. Remember that long question?
Yes.
I just started reading. It was like your entire medical history.
Some lady wrote, she wrote her entire medical history.
Yeah.
We just can't do that on a podcast.
My eyes glazed over. I couldn't do it because it would be the kind of thing where we would have to sit in the office and analyze the case, and there were just so many factors involved. So if you give us here, I'm going to give you some examples of short and pithy questions, which we can field here on our podcasts. This one is interesting because it talks about something called CM Core. CM Core is a supplement that I recommend. We'll tell you in just a moment what that is. This one's from Marvin.
Mm-hmm.
I am a diabetic treated with meds, metformin, Diovan. My physician recommends a statin drug for high triglycerides. We'll come back to that in a minute. Question, I purchased CM Core. He probably bought it via our store at drhoffman.com. By the way, that's where you can get a lot of the supplements we talk about here on Intelligent Medicine. I purchased CM Core. Are there any adverse drug interactions with my meds? Thank you. So several aspects of this. One, this guy is a diabetic who's treated with metformin and Diovan, and his doctor is now recommending a statin drug for high triglycerides. Your take on
Thank you. If he's a diabetic and he has high triglycerides, he's probably not on a proper diabetic diet. He's probably eating too many carbohydrates.
Thank you.
And what has to happen there is he needs to lower the carbohydrates, because if he has type 2 diabetes, this is defined as a condition of carbohydrate intolerance. Let me repeat, a condition of carbohydrate intolerance. So what needs to happen is many of the carbs, the high-carb food groups, especially the grains, sugars, sweets, processed food, that all needs to go away. When we do that, when we put somebody on the low-carb diabetic diet, we watch triglycerides literally fall off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
It is wonderful to see. And actually, once I see what the baseline triglycerides are, what the patient came in with, I could tell whether they're doing the diet or not.
Yeah, it's a
by looking again at the triglycerides.
It's a real giveaway. Yeah,
it's a giveaway.
Yeah. So, and by the way, you know, from a medical standpoint, statins do not reduce triglycerides.
Yeah.
They're not effective for, there are actually different types of medications that are useful for lowering triglycerides, but they've got terrible side effects and they've not been shown to reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. So they lower the triglycerides, but in such a way that it's not a natural lowering. It's an artificial lowering of the triglycerides. You don't obviate your overweight. You don't get into better shape. And you don't improve your diabetic control when you just fix the triglycerides artificially with a medication.
What about the study that showed statins may be problematic for women, progress to diabetes?
That's precisely what you don't want to be taking if you have diabetes that you can control in another way. So, I mean, what they do now is they say one of the risk factors for cardiovascular disease is diabetes, and therefore all diabetics should be on statins. Well, the problem is that statins, and there's now a warning on statin packages, that they increase the risk of diabetes. So, you know, what's up with that?
I don't understand. He is not a candidate for a statin.
I know.
Being a diabetic, that makes me want to pull my hair out.
I know. It makes me, I have to say, as a physician, it makes me ashamed of the training that my medical colleagues get. Because, you know, we doctors we're supposed to be critical scientists. And, you know, we're supposed to take the stuff that's being purveyed by the pharmaceutical industry and critically evaluate it and then determine if it's suitable for our patients and not just simply pass it along like drug salesmen. Because it's inappropriate. It's just inappropriate. And, you know, I don't know where we lost that integrity.
Yeah. The other thing that I would like to know from the person who submitted the question, was he ever referred to a qualified nutritionist for nutrition counseling?
It's unclear.
This has to be mandated as well.
Yeah.
There have to be lifestyle changes first. That's diet, that's exercise, physical activity, all of it. But primarily with diabetes, 90% of it is the diet.
Right, and then he might be able to get off his metformin.
Exactly.
He might be able to get off his Diovan, which is for his high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
All those things could be handled. And, oh, by the way, you know, what's a good treatment for high triglycerides? If we're looking for a medication, there's now prescription fish oil. And it's specifically designed to lower triglycerides. So the dosage is a little higher than just for prevention. It's about 6 capsules of fish oil a day will lower triglycerides, but you got to do the diet. And then there's another component which will help you lower triglycerides, which is exercise. Absolutely helps to lower triglycerides. So we want to include that in the prescription. So now let's get to the heart of his question. He purchased CMCore. He's staring at it. He's looking at it. He's saying, is it going to mess up my other medications? And my answer to that, because I'll handle a medical aspect of this, is no, because there is no harmful interaction between CMCore and the medications that he mentions, metformin and Diovan. In fact, it may have a synergistic effect, a beneficial effect, because I have several patients on metformin and CMCore simultaneously, and it really helps to get their blood sugar down. So now let me let you tell us a little bit about CMCore. CMCore, by the way, it's not available normally in health food stores. It's mostly purveyed by healthcare professionals, and so we make it available via our website.
Yeah. Berberine is actually used in traditional Chinese medicine, and it's actually a wonderful nutraceutical for cardiometabolic health. So berberine is beneficial in patients with metabolic syndrome, syndrome X, diabetes, all of those. And it can have a very positive effect on cardiovascular risk factors, blood sugar, all of that. And what CMCore also contains is grape seed extract, which is very good for helping to maintain healthy blood pressure levels. So CM Core is actually wonderful for that. And it's something that we often have our patients take along with some other things. There's another one that I can think of off the top of my head, Dr. Mm-hmm. Hoffman, for both diabetes and blood pressure, olive leaf.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, olive leaf extract is also helpful, you know. So I could think of the at least a handful of supplements that we would have this person take in addition to the metformin, the Diovan, and so forth, which would work very well synergistically.
Right. I mean, we love to see people like this.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So I actually pulled a couple of studies on berberine, and berberine is a fascinating substance because originally golden seal is used to treat infection. It has an antibacterial effect, but it also has a profound blood sugar regulating effect. And here's a study where they looked at the effects of berberine in patients with type 2 diabetes, and the patients were either given berberine or they were given metformin, which is the drug that this gentleman, Marvin, is taking. Marvin's already taking metformin. And so it was like a toe-to-toe comparison, head-to-head comparison between berberine and metformin. And what they found was that berberine significantly lowered fasting blood sugar. It also seemed to improve liver function. It was as effective as the metformin in this study.
Wow.
So very, very interesting. It reduced insulin levels, increasing insulin sensitivity,
mm-hmm.
by 28%. So this is a great result.
Yeah,
great result. It also can be used in patients who have hepatitis C. Often patients with hepatitis C also have diabetes. And it lowers, by the way, lowers triglycerides. It lowered triglycerides 19% in type 2 diabetes patients. And
which is great. It can keep them from getting fatty liver.
And, oh, by the way,
yeah.
Here's a clinical trial using 500 milligrams of berberine. There are several studies here. 2 times per day versus placebo in patients with high cholesterol. And what they found is that berberine significantly lowered total cholesterol 29%, triglycerides 35%, LDL cholesterol 25%, and the HDL stayed the same. So fascinating.
Fascinating
yeah. stuff, yeah. So, you know, it's perfect. It's one of my favorite supplements for diabetes, but not just for diabetics, also for patients who don't have full-blown diabetes but have metabolic syndrome. They're fat around the midsection. They have high triglycerides. They might be at higher cardiovascular risk.
And, they might have borderline blood pressure or all of these kind of things.
Exactly.
Or the things they expect to happen after a certain age, which is just not so.
And it also, it seems to have a little bit of an appetite suppressant effect. And by the way, they did another study looking at the other ingredient, Mega Natural BP, which is the thing that they combine it with in CM Core.
Mm-hmm.
22 patients with pre-hypertension were given 300 milligrams of Mega Natural BP. That's the grapeseed extract. Those in the Mega Natural BP group had reduced systolic blood pressure from 134 to 125 and diastolic blood pressure from 79 to 73. So it's very common that we see the patients with the trifecta. They have high cholesterol, high blood sugar or prediabetes, and they have high blood pressure. And this
yeah.
is that's why I love this supplement. It's great.
Yeah.
CM Core. Okay.
Wonderful supplement.
Yeah. All right. So I think we nailed it down for Marvin. Yes. Marvin, open the bottle. Take it.
Open the bottle and take it. Absolutely.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Okay. So another, this is from Gary. Gary is a faithful listener to Health Talk, the WR radio program I do, and now to the Intelligent Medicine podcast, and he always asks intelligent questions. He writes, Dr. Hoffman, I have never heard you talk about this, but I know that you're a runner. And I know that you, like me, are not getting any younger. Gary, why did you have to remind me? And also, you take a joint support supplement. Yes, I do. It's called Avasoy Complete. He asked, what about hydrolyzed collagen for joint health and bone density? Signed, Gary in Brooklyn. Okay, so what's your take on that, hydrolyzed collagen?
Collagen is absolutely necessary for our bone, skin, connective tissue, all of that, the proline to hydroxyproline and everything. So, no, collagen is absolutely important. A collagen supplement would be effective. And there are other things to build collagen as well, like vitamin C and resveratrol and hyaluronic acid and so forth. I think, you know, these are all things that are very, very beneficial.
And I think
for collagen.
One thing I would point out is there are different qualities of collagen. And so, for example, there's, you know, Knox gelatin basically is sort of pre-digested animal hooves. And, you know, while it may help to grow stronger nails, a lot of women, you know, this is an old thing when it goes back to when I was a kid, women would take Knox gelatin packets and drink it down, you know, mix it with their tea, and this would be so that they could improve their nails. And they swore that it works. I don't know, maybe they didn't have enough of the amino acids that you find in animal hooves. But to me, this is actually the least effective of all the collagens. It's sort of, you know, cheap, denatured collagen. What I like is the undenatured collagen type 2, which is sometimes abbreviated UC2. That is helpful in arthritis, both rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis. And it's in a product that we sell called Rheuma Shield. And you generally take it away from meals, and I recommend that patients take it at bedtime. It can be helpful for joint problems. And then there's this thing about hyaluronic acid, and hyaluronic acid is controversial, but I think there's potential for good quality hyaluronic acid products. I don't currently sell a hyaluronic acid product. Maybe we should think about getting one into our dispensary at the Hoffman Center. But
Collagen Booster might have some of
those. Collagen, yes. We have the product. We do have a Collagen Booster. Collagen Booster is a good product. And we use it also for, frankly, for cosmetic purposes, because the idea being that, you know, when you lose the collagen in your skin loses its elasticity, you get a little bit of that hollowed out look. And to plump up the collagen in your rosy cheeks, that may be beneficial. And it may have a nice effect internally as well on the bone. So,
yeah.
I'm thinking that and for the joints. So, yeah, Collagen Booster, and it also has some other synergistic ingredients.
And that's in addition to, you know, the glucosamine, chondroitin, ASU,
right.
All of these are actually very beneficial.
Which are after all, constituents of collagen. And, you know, so these are all different breakdown products of collagen that occurs naturally. All right, here's, speaking of osteoporosis, we now have a question from Don. Dear Dr. Hoffman, your article on Ostera, O-S-T-E-R-A, Ostera, and it must be on our website at drhoffman.com. It's one of our articles under the osteoporosis section. It mentions Prolia, the generic name of Prolia. This is a drug. It's a new drug. Denosumab. You mentioned in your article on Ostera, Prolia as having promise for the treatment of osteoporosis. Do you have any up-to-date info on Prolia as it concerns side effects, and is Ostera still recommended? This is from Don. So it's a little bit of a wonky question. I'm going to let you talk a little bit about Ostera in a minute, but I'll talk about the drug. Prolia is a brand-new drug for osteoporosis. Now, a lot of people are going to say, hooray, because, you know, we need better, more effective drugs. And I say, not so fast, because Prolia, its generic name is denosumab, is a monoclonal antibody drug. Now, we know these drugs are very, very powerful. Among the monoclonal antibodies are some of the immunosuppressive drugs used to treat rheumatoid arthritis and ulcerative colitis, and they're very expensive, very new, and they carry with them a wide variety of side effects, including higher risk of cancer, potentially, especially lymphomas. They suppress the immune system, maybe rendering you a little bit more prone to infection. This particular drug is powerful and very expensive, and its use probably should be confined to men who have terrible osteoporosis due to treatments for prostate cancer. I think that there may be You know, when you cut off hormones in men and they have terrible osteoporosis and they've not responded to anything, this might be a last resort. So, you know, I just see very limited value for Prolia in the treatment of osteoporosis. It's very, very powerful, and side effects, I think, abound, and they even more side effects will emerge as it's used. I was disturbed to see the other day a woman come in with, you know, moderate osteoporosis, the kind that we often treat with natural therapies, with Ostera, vitamin K, and strontium, very manageable. It was suggested that she take Prolia. I have no idea why it was, why she was told to take the most expensive, strongest drug on the market.
But the most you may have hit it when you said the most expensive.
Yeah, yeah. But there is a tendency among doctors now to you know, to give you, instead of like a cheap, old-fashioned antibiotic, the most expensive, powerful antibiotic for a mild infection. And similarly for osteoporosis, because it's a brand new thing, and maybe the pharmaceutical rep had just left some samples in the office, maybe this doctor was just had it on his mind and, you know, thought, okay, let me try it on this lady. But the reason I mentioned Prolia in the article on Ostera is that Prolia is unique among osteoporosis drugs because it actually seems to reduce inflammation in the bone. And that's the mechanism by which Ostera works.
Mm-hmm.
So Ostera, in a much gentler way, seems to reduce the inflammation that causes bone deterioration. And it has as its main ingredient hops. So
Humulus lupulus.
Right, yeah. Right. Which is, actually, I mean, I read an article, very interesting, that out in Long Island, you know, where both of us summer, they have fields of hops now. They used to have to import it from Europe and Germany. Now they have these ingenious young entrepreneurs. I guess, you know, maybe they're either trust fund kids or maybe they're just frustrated investment bankers. And they dropped out to raise hops in fields on Long
Island. Microbrews and nanobrews and all these things. Craft beers are all the rage and all this. Yeah.
It's organic and it's natural. But anyway, so hops, it turns out that beer drinkers have a lower incidence of osteoporosis. And it may be that the hops has an anti-inflammatory effect. And hops actually are included in several of anti-inflammatory formulas. We use a hops formula called Caprex with a K, K-A-P-R-E-X, to treat osteoarthritis and joint pain. And it's pretty effective. I actually had a patient come in who had very bad joint pain. Her fingers were very stiff, and I gave her that and curcumin and boswellin, a bunch of anti-inflammatory stuff with fish oil. And her fingers move fine, and she says she's having no pain. So, you know, I think a cocktail of anti-inflammatory nutrients can help the bone, because part of the reason we lose bone is because of chronic inflammation.
Yes. Yes, it's definitely an inflammatory disease, as are so many of our chronic diseases, osteoporosis being one of them. So, yeah, you know, no, Ostera is very, very, very good. Ostera also contains some vitamin D, some vitamin K as well, and some berberine, speaking of which.
Right.
A little bit of berberine as well, yeah.
Berberine, and it, berberine also has anti-inflammatory effects. So it's actually a well-researched product. And the reason I mentioned Prolia is because, you know, they did scientific research to figure out how it worked, and it seems to work on a pathway similar to Prolia, but in a more gentle way. It seems to affect something called NF-kappa B, which is a messenger molecule that triggers inflammation. And so, you know, there's a lot of buzz around agents that can modulate NF-kappa B. And in the pharmaceutical industry, they develop ultra-powerful drugs. And in the nutraceutical industry, they're always looking for natural compounds that can have that effect. So, I mean, that's the science behind it. So, to Don, I wouldn't recommend Prolia, but I would recommend Ostera, O-S-T-E-R-A.
Yeah.
So, anything else to add to this today's podcast?
I believe that was it for the questions, unless you had some more.
That's all. That's all I got.
Yeah, that was somebody else wrote in talking about, you know, would love to hear this is somebody named Dan. Oh,
okay.
Here it is. I'd love to hear the viewpoint on frozen yogurt and its health benefits.
Yeah. You know, people, I think there was after the Seinfeld episode. Remember the Seinfeld episode?
The low-fat one?
It had Mayor Giuliani in it. Mary Giuliani did a cameo in that. That was so, that was so old that it was during the Giuliani administration. So that was like back in the early 90s, I think. And so what happened was George and the crew and Jerry and what's her name?
Oh my God. Elaine.
Yeah. They were all like, they said, this stuff is great because it's a low fat yogurt and we can eat as much as we want.
Right.
And then they started to look at their waistlines and their waistlines were expanding. And then, you know, I think, I don't remember the episode so long ago, but I think then Mayor Giuliani came on as kind of like a consumer advocate, you know, saying, beware of claims, you know. And I think they busted the low fat yogurt establishment because they were claiming that, you know, you can eat as much as you want and you won't get fat. So what's the nutrition science behind that?
There's no nutrition science. There's sugar added to the stuff. If there's sugar added to the stuff, don't eat it. Frozen yogurt is no better than anything else, than yogurt with jam in it, which is your regular fruited yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
There really isn't a benefit at all because you're ingesting something sweet. We have to change the conversation and start gearing people away from the sweet and maybe get them more onto the savory. Like all of these frozen yogurts and smoothies and things, they're all sweet. They're either a fruit flavor or a vanilla, chocolate, or strawberry flavor, some other kind of thing. But have you ever heard of a smoothie that's eggplant and garlic flavored?
Right.
Well, no.
But you know, I think what they're doing is they're sort of drafting on the popularity of yogurt as a health food, right?
Yeah.
So, frankly, you know, when yogurt was first introduced in America, it was kind of like tofu. It's like, ugh. You know, it's like America's least favorite foods were yogurt, tofu, and liver. You know, people hate that kind of stuff. So what they did, the smart manufacturers said, well, we can make yogurt sexier. We can add flavorings and wonderful, you know, basically sweeten it to the point where people can overcome their aversion for sour fermented milk. And then the yogurt revolution took off. And then it has this aura. Remember when they were first introducing yogurt and they showed these, these Bulgarian people who were like living to 110.
Oh, I remember that ad, yes.
Right, and they were eating the yogurt and it was like, that was the
food
secret.
Of longevity,
that was
yes.
The secret. And actually there may be something to it because it's the probiotics in real live yogurt that's healthy. But the stuff that these folks were eating, traditional yogurt in Bulgaria, was very high fat yogurt. It wasn't, they didn't think of, you know, making it into low fat or no fat yogurt. They were having full fat yogurt.
That's it. And, you know, there wasn't fruit added to this stuff or additional sugar added to it or anything like that. So, no, really, really.
I mean, if you're going to add some fruit, get some fresh berries and just put them in the yogurt, but don't get that jam marmalade thing that's sweetened with high fructose corn syrup and, you know.
Yeah, people don't understand when they eat a blueberry flavored yogurt or a peach flavored yogurt, they're having yogurt with jam in it, essentially. So get the organic yogurt. You don't have to get the low fat or the non fat. Get the full fat. It's fine. Put your own fresh sliced peaches or berries. Enjoy it on occasion. And really, that's essentially it.
All right. Yeah. Good way to wrap up today's edition of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thank you, Leila Mudin, for joining us. And oh, by the way, you are available for consults. The way it works is that people can come in for sort of a mega workup with me. And, you know, that's for, challenging health problems. And it, frankly, you know, can add up in terms of, expense. And, there's another pathway into the Hoffman Center, via consultation with, our nutritionist, Leila Mudin. And, that, will involve, you working with your physician, because we insist that you have a physician, on the outside. But Leila will work with the nutrition aspect of it. And it's a more, economical, pathway if you don't want to get, you know, go full boat, into an entire, medical workup with me. Of course, I'm available for that whenever you like, but, Leila also works independently with many patients.
Yep.
All right, great. So sign up for our newsletter. You can hear from, yours truly and also, Leila. It's radioprogram@AOL.com. Just state that you want to be on the newsletter mailing list, and, that's another way that you can receive information along the lines of intelligent medicine. Thanks for joining us, Leila.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hoffman.
And I'll see you in the office tomorrow.
Okay.